Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys in the estate planning group at the Herzog Law Firm, and we are here each Saturday morning to talk to you, chat with you, answer your questions, and get you some interesting information, hopefully about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, Medicaid applications, state administration, taxes, beneficiary designations. I mean, anything like that related to the area of estate planning and elder law, we'd be happy to talk to you this morning. Whoa, 6 days till Christmas, Debbie, huh?
6 days till Christmas. I'll be in Missouri.
Oh, you're going out to see your mom this year? Cool.
I am. Fly out on Tuesday. Hopefully some of this white stuff will be gone by then, or at least we'll have everything cleared. So.
Well, they're still clear. Boy, this was one heck of a storm, wasn't it? Holy cow.
It was.
Ben and I were just talking before we came on the radio. He said, he's out in the boonies, he's almost in Vermont. And I think he said he had about almost 30 inches of snow out there. So, I live in a nice little suburban, subdivision in Loudonville, and it was, they didn't get to my driveway till 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. So I was, I couldn't get out. I couldn't get my car out of the garage. The road was plowed, but my driveway wasn't. So,
Yeah, it's a mess. So if people are home, still stuck in the snow, they can give us a call. The phone number here at the station is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Harry and I could talk the entire hour, but we would love to hear from you if you have any questions. I did want to mention that we're taking a little hiatus during Christmas and New Year's for the webinars, but we'll be back on track on Wednesday, January 6th, for our regular Wednesday webinars. And at 10 a.m., it's going to be Aging in Place. And 2 in the afternoon is Wills versus Trust. And then on the 13th, January 13th, How to Plan Your Estate and What to Do When a Loved One Dies. Then our webinar week will be the week of January 18th. So those aren't up on the website, but I'm sure they'll be up there by Monday. So if you want to register for one of those in January, you can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com and register.
Cool. We had pretty good attendance at these things, I think, generally. And very informative for you to start learning or continued learning about all the important things you need to keep in mind and considering in looking at and reviewing your estate plan periodically. Let me tell you, there was this week, we talk on and on about beneficiary designations, all right? Periodically review your beneficiary designations. So, here's what happened. This could have been a disaster. I was able to help the client avoid it. So I have a client who passed away within the last several months and had a life insurance policy with a major life insurance company. I won't say which one it is. So guess what? he's been married to his current wife for probably close to 20 years. He was divorced from his previous wife 25 years ago. Unfortunately, when the divorce was finalized, he never changed the beneficiary. So the ex-wife is still the primary beneficiary on his life insurance policy. So I'm thinking, so the claim went in. And I said, of course, under New York law, the issuance of the divorce decree severs rights, even if, So guess what? The insurance company comes back and says, oh, we've had it reviewed by legal, and we've decided we're going to pay the death benefit to the ex-wife. I said, huh? The client called up was quite upset, understandably. And that's what they were going to do. That was their legal conclusion. So I dug back in. We got the statute to them. I wrote an opinion in a letter to their legal counsel and resubmitted the claim along with a divorce decree because the divorce decree did not, it didn't deal with this insurance policy, okay? If it had, that could would have been a different result. So finally, yesterday, I get a call from the insurance company. It says, they resubmitted it to the legal department, and the legal department has re-reviewed it, and they now concur, in my opinion, that the policy does not get paid to the ex-wife, and because there was no subsequent alternate beneficiary, it gets paid to the deceased person's estate, which was what they should have done in the first place. All right?
Right.
So the current wife will now get the money because under the will says everything goes to the current wife, not the ex-wife. So it will come through the estate. Unfortunately, because they didn't change the beneficiary, we now have to probate the will, which wouldn't have been necessary. Okay? But it could have been a disaster, you know? Plus, the divorced wife is in a nursing home, so she got the insurance money. Would have all gone to the nursing home. So,
yeah, that would
look
have
at your look at your beneficiaries, please, please. I mean, that's an extreme example of what can happen, but it does happen more frequently than you might imagine. So we're not just telling you this to to fill up airtime. It's really really important that you look at these things.
Well, I've had that before, and it's kind of a very embarrassing situation for some people, because whenever we have people come in to see us, we have them fill out a questionnaire and we give them a list of things to bring with them, right? Like statements and your insurance policies and everything. And I've been sitting at the table and I look at the old, a lot of them are MetLife policies. Remember the really, really old ones when they used to go to your door and collect the money and everything?
Yeah, the premiums were like $3.87 a week or something like that for a $300 policy.
So, I mean, I enroll the policy, dust off all the dust, and I look at it, and I'm like, who's Sally? And I see the wife's face just, like, go red, right? And I look at him, and he's like, oh, my gosh. And I'm like, who's Sally? And she's like, it's his ex-wife. I'm like, yeah, you might want to change that.
I mean, you know, we're laughing, but it's not funny. And let me say something. This not only relates to life insurance, it relates to all of your qualified retirement assets, your IRAs, your 401k, your pension plan at work. It applies to annuities. Lots of you have annuity products out there. All of these types of assets have beneficiaries on them. And you really, every couple of years, you got to dust these things off and write them down. And people forget about it. Just frankly, they do forget about these things. This stuff gets put in a drawer someplace. And later on, you know, well, by the time they bring it into us, I mean, they're so musty because they've been up in the attic or down in the basement for about 20 years when they bring in the old insurance policies there. There you go. Anyway, a lesson well taken.
And we'd love to hear from you guys. Give us a call. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. There's a question that I have, too, is whenever we're trying to do a family tree, okay, let's just say something goes wrong and we have to probate the will. When you have situations where people are in second marriages or third marriages and they have kids that are his, mine, ours. Wasn't that a movie? But anyway, so
yeah, Lucille Ball and Bob Hope, I think it was called Yours, Mine, and Ours. It was back in the 60s, I think, or something.
So we were trying to figure out a family tree yesterday, you know, as to who would actually take, and it was really kind of a convoluted thing. What happened was, so Dad passed away. Mom had been gone for a long time. So Dad passed away, and he has one daughter, but the daughter predeceased him. She had four kids, okay? Mm-hmm. So she had four kids, and then we start looking at the kids' last names, and they don't match. I mean, these are like adult children, right? So we look at the four kids. So out of the four kids, two of the kids also predeceased their grandfather, leaving two other grandkids and one of the other grandkids post-deceased the grandfather. So died after the grandfather died. So we're looking at it and trying to figure out, you know, who's going to take. And then we're looking at the last names, and some of these kids, apparently she got remarried, and some of these kids kept the name from the original father, and some took the name of the second
of the new husband.
Right. And then the question was, they changed their name, but were they adopted out? Right?
Right.
Does it really matter, though, because it's still their mother? So we're just, it's one of those, like, law school questions, right? We're sitting there, like, drawing all these diagrams, trying to figure out who's going to get the money.
Harry, Debbie?
Yes.
I'm going to jump in there. That's, you're going to leave us with a cliffhanger here. But we have Bruce from Saratoga on the line.
Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. I have a Medicaid question.
Okay.
My mom, who's 88, she currently has some state programs, but she does not have Medicaid. I understand, I thought I heard you say a few weeks ago that there's two levels of Medicaid. I mean, she's in a, she lives by, in a retirement community, you know, but it's not assisted living or anything. But I can see the day coming when she may need some help to stay there. Is there like two levels of Medicaid? One that you just get like help for, and the other one would be like full nursing home.
I'll let you take that one, Harry.
Sure. yeah, I think what you're talking about is the difference between what we call community Medicaid, which provides home care, and nursing home care, which is chronic care for somebody who has to go permanently to a nursing home. In your mother's situation, if she is getting to the point, so she lives in an independent apartment, right? That,
correct.
That is not assisted living. You're independent, but it provides some services like meals and transportation and things like that, or it's just an apartment? Yeah.
Yeah, they have a cafeteria. I mean, I can give you the name of the place. You probably know it, but...
No, it's fine. You could certainly, I mean, even people who are living in these retirement communities could certainly apply for home care through the Medicaid program, all right?
Okay.
And what we need to do is look at her income and her assets. But you could work out a situation if she needs, you know, 3 hours a day of help, you know, with bathing, dressing, meal preparation. If she has her meals there, she wouldn't need that. She may need some, you know, some additional transportation services and things like that, some light housekeeping for her apartment. You know, people get to the point where they're not able to do their laundry anymore. I mean, some of these places will do the laundry for you. Maybe they can't change the sheets on your bed. Some of them have housekeeping services, some of them don't. Or they have a cafeteria of services you can sign up for. but the home care program through Medicaid can provide personal care services to assist your mother in that process. Now, there are income and resource limits in order to qualify for these programs. The resource level, the asset level for a single individual is $15,000. So if she has more money than that, which she probably does, we'd have to
She does not.
Well, if she has $15,000 of assets or less, then she's already eligible from an asset standpoint. And then in her income, we can keep her income available. I had a similar situation with my mother-in-law, who was living at Beltrone, out, you know, it was an independent apartment project in Albany, out near Wolf Road. And they had a dining room, and they had light transportation services and things like that. But she was in her mid-90s. She needed assistance. She was on a walker. She couldn't do her laundry anymore. She couldn't run the washing machine. She couldn't make her bed. So my wife found a woman who would come in 3 days a week for 5 hours initially and provide services to her. She'd run errands for her, go to the grocery store and things like that. And through the Medicaid system, we kept all of her income available to pay her rent, which your mother would need as well, and pay her other, like her insurance premiums, her cable TV bill, her cell phone bill. So we can shelter all of her income through what's called a nonprofit special needs trust, and yet qualify her on an income level for the personal care services. And so if that's something you're interested in, if you're in Saratoga, you know, we have an office in Saratoga. You could certainly come in for a free consultation and learn more about the program. And you could talk to Debbie, or, I mean, she lives in Saratoga. She's sort of the principal attorney in the Saratoga office, but we all go to all the offices.
Okay. I understand that the look back is not as long for the program you just talked about.
That's correct. It's the look back for chronic care in a nursing home is 5 years. So if the person applying for Medicaid has given away any assets or property within the last 5 years of going to apply for nursing home Medicaid, that's going to penalize them and extend out the time that they're not eligible. In the home care situation, the look back is half of that. It's 2.5 years, all right? But it's 2.5, if I understand, Debbie, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's any asset transfers that have been made on or after this past October 1st of 2020. So anything prior, if you gave away property a year from like October of 2018, I don't believe the look back is going to, it's going to start on October 1st of 2020 and look prospectively forward.
Right, they're phasing it in, from what I understand. Kind of like they phased in the Medicaid look back, and back in 2006, it wasn't a full 5 years, remember, until, 2.5 years after they implemented it?
That's correct. So it's going to be, in other words, if you apply for personal care services for your mother in February, they're only going to look back 5 months to October. They're not going to look back 2.5 years. They're going to look back to October 1st. And so if in September, if last September she wrote a check to you for $10,000, made you a gift, that's not going to count against her. Okay? So it's going to be, it's phasing in over a period of time. And if there weren't any gifts, it's not an issue at all for anybody.
Okay. So, yeah, it sounds like she's a candidate for this. I probably could get in and, you know, currently, well, she does have one woman who comes in on, you know, one day a week and flips her bed around for her.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and she's handling that financially. She's doing okay financially now, but I can see sometime in the near future where she's going to need a little bit more care and help on a regular basis. So sounds like she'd be a good candidate for this program.
Yeah, we have to, because she doesn't. Now, here's the other thing, Bruce. If she gets to a point, once she's in the program, if she needs additional hours, all right, go back to my mother-in-law for a minute. When my mother-in-law 4 years ago got into this program, she only needed 15 hours a week of care. Well, as the years went on, and she lived to be almost 98 years old, by the time she was in the last 10, 12 months of her life, she was eligible for and receiving 10 hours a day of care through the Medicaid program. So we were able to find caretakers who would come in 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, to assist my wife with the care of her mother. And so you don't have to reapply for Medicaid every time you need more hours. Once you're in the system, you can simply ask for an updated evaluation of the amount of hours she needs. And if they're approved, then you can get advanced and additional hours that are paid for through the Medicaid system. So it really, New York has one of the most comprehensive sets of home care programs, frankly, any state in the country. Some states have very little home care, and because the federal government only mandates that you have one home care program. New York has multiple different kinds of home care programs. So, you know, they're there. A lot of people are just unaware that they exist, or they figure, we couldn't possibly qualify for Medicaid. But it's really worthwhile exploring. And you're really smart because you're getting on top of it now before your mother is at a point where she just, you know, she can't function independently anymore. So you kind of got to, you know, grab the bull by the horns in these situations as you're doing.
Okay, well, sounds like I got to come in and see Debbie again.
Okay.
I already came in once and saw Debbie for me. And she was very nice, very knowledgeable. I appreciated it. And this show you do is great because it gives a people a general knowledge of things. Like I say, I really appreciate this show.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the compliment, Bruce. We do. You know, people are starved for information about, you know, the elder law and housing issues and care issues. And there's no place you can really go. There's no centralized place to kind of get your questions answered about these things. And so, I mean, we just really enjoy doing the show, and it's really gratifying to us to hear people like you who are really benefiting from it and enjoying it. So, you know, thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Take care.
I look forward
have a great
to seeing
holiday,
you.
Both of you. Enjoy your flight there. Hope stay safe on that flight there, Debbie.
Definitely.
Okay. I think the planes may be pretty empty. I don't know if they're empty. I have a friend of mine who just went to Texas a week ago. Her daughter lives there and just had a new baby, so she's going down there for a month or so. And she said the plane to Austin was practically empty, but, you know, I don't know.
The flight I originally had, they must have canceled it and combined it with another one because they didn't have enough people. So they kind of messed around with my flight. But no, you can go online, and because I've got the app, and I can go on and I can see exactly how many seats are full. It's funny. Oh, okay. It's like, you know, so it's a fairly full flight, but, you know, you do what you can do, right?
Harry and Debbie, we have Carol on the line from Schenectady this morning.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. I really enjoy your show. You're very informative. But my question is, a little quick back. I have a friend who's been, I've known her all my life. She's elderly, and she has no living relatives in the area. She's a niece and nephew down at Augusta, Georgia. I've been checking in on her since March, and I'm going to shorten this long story to the fact that eventually, I had to call 911 two different times. Now, the second time, she's now, the hospital transferred her to assisted living. I had been in contact with the niece and nephew, I can't even tell you how many times, because I knew she had no will, no power of attorney, no living will. Mm. And now she's in this assisted living, which you can't visit her. She's sometimes confused, sometimes not. And her apartment is just sitting there, not being paid for. Her bills are not being paid for. I've tried to get the niece and nephew to do something, and I'm just very concerned about her and what's going to happen when there's nobody to say what can happen. She has, I've helped her with her bills, so I know she has plenty of money, but I'm just worried. You know, the apartment building's not going to let her stay much longer, or just empty or not paying the rent and stuff, and the other bills are piling up, and I just don't really know where to go with this.
Well, it's...
I understand you could get a guardianship, but that costs a lot of money and time, which I can't afford to do that.
Well, so, you have to. I mean, that's really the only alternative. Someone would have to seek guardianship of her and take over her, have a court-appointed guardian to take over her finances and her personal care as well, and that may not be something you really want to undertake. I don't think the cost of the guardianship would be ordinarily paid out of her resources, not yours. So you'd have to. You'd have to have a law firm come in. If you were willing to do it, I think first of all you'd have to have a consultation with us or someone to look at what the duties and obligations are, because you're undertaking legal responsibility for the person. The court would certainly notify the niece and nephew if they're her closest relatives, and they would have an opportunity to step in. But it sounds like they're just not interested or not willing to do it. And I guess the only other thing would be some public administrator who might be able to come in. I don't know. What do you think, Deb?
I agree. I mean, the question is, do you want a petition for guardianship? It does come out of her money. And it sounds like you're a really, really good friend and you're very concerned about her. So you could petition for guardianship, and then you would basically step into her shoes and be able to take care of everything. It really sounds like if you don't step up, there's really no one that's going to step up for her. And it's just going to snowball, right? It's just going to get worse and worse. And like you said, I mean, the apartments, because of the moratorium on evictions, I don't think that they can evict her right now, even though she's not paying her bills. But that's going to change, if it hasn't already. So I guess
It's going to change the end of the year, I think, unless it's extended. Yeah, it's.
So, I mean, you have to decide what you're going to do.
I know I don't want to be the guardian because I know that it would cause trouble with the niece because she was very angry with me that I called the ambulance for her, but I had found her not eating, not being able to go to the bathroom, and just going where she was, and she was furious that I called an ambulance. She thought she should just stay there and die. So
I mean, you would have called, you know, Adult Protective Services at some point. Adult Protective Services through the County Social Services Department would have been notified at some point, and they would come in and take charge of her. They might even petition to be her guardian or someone like that. If you don't want to undertake it, I would certainly understand that you wouldn't want the responsibility and the legal responsibility for taking care of all those things. For someone who's not, you know, who's not a person, who's not a relative, and things like that, that certainly is understandable. But there probably are public entities who would be able to do that. In some instances, the facility, the assisted living facility. I know there are some places where their nursing homes actually seek guardianship of a resident there. For the purpose of making sure that they get paid, you know, who's paying the assisted living facility. So there are a lot of issues there. You might want to just, you know, come in for a conference or something to go over some of these things. So you might have a better idea of who might be appropriate to get in touch with. Because you know, I certainly understand that you want to help her, but you don't necessarily want to be her legal guardian either. And that's a real serious problem. There are so many people these days who really, literally have no one other than somebody that they've known, you know, at church or at a senior citizens activity or just lives next door to them, you know, who's been helping them out on an informal basis, but they don't necessarily want to undertake the legal obligation of either being power of attorney or a guardian. So it's really becoming a serious problem for a lot of elderly people.
Yeah, and I'm afraid to be the guardian anyway with the niece, even though she doesn't do anything. Then maybe I make an appointment to come in. I should make one.
You come in for an hour. You know, you can have a 1 hour consultation. We're not going to bill you for the initial consultation, and maybe we can brainstorm and come up with some ideas that might work for you. Okay.
I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Take care.
All right, and we are at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I have been chatting here the last first half hour with couple of callers and who have had some very interesting and thought-provoking questions the first half hour. We would love to hear from you again during the 8:30 to 9 o'clock half hour, and you can reach us in the studio at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And we can try to answer your questions about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, Medicaid planning, all kinds of good stuff like that. Wills and trusts, powers of attorney. We've just been talking a little bit about potential of a guardianship proceeding having to be done. Go ahead.
Well, I was thinking, you know, it's this niece. I mean, if those of you that weren't listening the first half, hopefully you were. So the niece and nephew basically don't want anything to do with the lady that, you know, she called in about. And it's just silly because they think that, well, you know, she dies, we get her money. I mean, if she ends up going to a nursing home or she ends up someplace else, I mean, they're going to take all of her money. There's not going to be anything left at the end of the day because they'll basically petition for guardianship. So if the nursing home, if she ends up in a nursing home and the nursing home petitions for guardianship, they're going to take her money. They're not going to do the correct spend down or anything like that. They're just going to take the money. So if this niece and nephew think that they can just sit on the sideline and just like, oh, well, we'll just wait till she dies and we'll take her money then, there's not going to be anything. They should step up and take care of their aunt. That's right. My soapbox speech for the day.
Definitely. Easier said than done, however, in some situations, but you're absolutely right. And very often, the nursing home, or the assisted living facility, obviously, that is far less expensive, but they may at some point, it depends whether they're getting paid or not, or how that's all working. But it's a complicated situation, and it's too complex to go into a lot of detail on the radio. But it really is something that needs to be addressed pronto, I would say, definitely. So 476-5900 is our number here. Excuse me, at the studio, and is all your Christmas shopping done, Debbie?
Yes.
Or do you buy gift cards? You can't take a lot of stuff on the plane, huh? So
No, but, you know, it's fine. No, I hate gift cards. I really do.
I know. I do, too.
It's one of those things. I hate gift cards, but I did what I had originally done, because my sister was supposed to come for Christmas, which she's not coming now, but mm-hmm. I had originally just ordered everything, had it shipped to my mom's house. It worked out perfect because she wraps everything. Right? And then all I have to do is just show up. Anyway, but this year, I shipped it all to my mother's house, and then my sister decided that they're not coming for Christmas. So then my mother had to box everything up and ship it to my sister. So we're going to open gifts via Zoom on Christmas Eve.
Are you going to be back in the office before you leave? Are you going to be on Monday or Tuesday, or when are you leaving?
I'm in on Monday. I fly out on Tuesday.
Okay, well, because there is a present waiting on your desk for me. And
ooh, exciting.
You have to probably, I think you're going to have to take it to, I think you have to take it out there to Missouri, I think, show your mom.
Oh, no. I don't know if I want to do that or not.
Well, you let me know. It's just be our little secret. Okay.
So.
Very funny. So, listen, I did want to talk about one thing that happened this week. Governor Cuomo this week signed a new piece of legislation which makes a massive revision in the power of attorney statute, okay? And, in fact, unfortunately, it doesn't go into effect for 6 months, 180 days. So, well, the new statute will not go into effect till probably next July 1st. But here's what it does. It makes a major revision in this absolutely gargantuanly complex, incomprehensible power of attorney form that we have had to use for the last 10 years because it's mandated by the state legislature. They're going to get rid of this thing called the statutory gift rider, okay? The current power of attorney, and those of you, many of those of your clients who you've signed them, believe me, you got to initial it about four or five times. You got to sign it once in front of a notary, and then you got to sign the gift writer like a will. It's got to be witnessed by two witnesses and a notary. It is extremely complicated to fill out. We've had powers of attorney come in here in the office that have been prepared and supervised by other lawyers, and they're not right. They're not filled out right. So they're going to scrap the whole concept of the statutory gift writer. It's coming out of the statute. And if you want to grant gifting powers, you're going to do it in the basic power of attorney form in the modification section, which is where it should have always been in the first place. So it's now it's going to have to be signed once in front of a notary, no more witness stuff at the end. And I think it's going to be quite a bit simplified. The other thing that's important also is the current statute as it's written says that it's unlawful for a bank or a financial institution to refuse to honor a New York statutory form of power of attorney. Well, that's all very nice, but there's no penalty for not doing it, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, essentially, if you wanted to get the bank to make the bank recognize the power of attorney, you basically have to bring an action for an injunction and get a court to order the bank. Well, nobody's going to do that. So now the new statute has sanctions. So if a bank or a financial institution refuses to honor the New York power of attorney form, guess what? The court can impose legal fees and damages to the party who has the power of attorney. So now, under the threat of being awarded legal fees in this action, you know, the statute has a little bit of teeth in it that it didn't have before. So I think what's going to happen is going to simplify the power of attorney statute considerably starting next summer, and that should be a welcome relief for everybody in New York State. It's a huge advancement in estate planning in New York State, because when did the statute come in, Deb? 2009, 2010? So it's like 10 years we've had this.
2009.
Yeah, this gargantuanly complex. I mean, our power of attorney form in our office went from, I think, 3 pages to 12 or 13 pages,
mm-hmm.
as did everyone else's. Even if you go to a form store, I mean, I don't think of the hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of powers of attorney that I have notarized and witnessed over the last 10 years, I seriously doubt more than a handful of my clients have actually read it from start to finish, okay? They just don't.
Oh, no, I agree.
And even if even the ones who do don't have any idea what it means, even if they read it, okay? So hopefully it will simplify the whole process for everyone else, because right now, it's the most complicated document that we sign at a will signing ceremony. It is far more complicated than the will itself. And it's another one of these well-intentioned statutes that was intended to draw to people's attention the fact that a power of attorney is a very powerful legal document. You should understand the powers you're potentially giving to someone else. That is very important for people to understand. But in the process, you know, they overthought it, they overwrote it, and hopefully now we'll be able to get back to something that's a little more reasonable and understandable for people. So, anyway, look forward to the summer.
I think that's a great idea. You know, that's the whole thing. In the language, it said that they were not supposed to reject it, but it was like, so what do we do if they do? Well, there's really nothing you can do.
What do you do? Yeah, let's go into court and spend $3,500 or $4,500 in legal fees getting an injunction directing the bank to recognize the power of attorney. I don't think anyone's ever brought in, you know, nobody would do that, you know.
No.
You just wouldn't do it. And we've certainly had situations. I know we've had situations here in the office where you will have a power of attorney that's reviewed by a financial, you know, it could be a stock company. It could be a stock brokerage firm. And they say, oh, no, you have to use our form. Have you had that happen to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh no, you have to use the R form. Well, I say, well, that's all well and good, but my client is at a point where they can't sign your form. They signed this power of attorney 5 years ago. They're not healthy enough, or they are not mentally competent enough at this point to sign your form. Well, then we can't help you. Well, now we have a little teeth in and say, okay, so we'll see about that. And if we have to go to the judge and ask him to enforce that, guess what? He can award legal fees against you, you know, so our client doesn't have to pay the bill. So
right.
Maybe they'll pay a little more attention.
Win-win, right?
I think so.
One can
yeah.
only hope.
It's just a matter. It's amazing that it took this long. This statute has been kicking around in the legislature for 5 or 6 years, and it just finally got passed. I mean, you really wonder sometimes what these people are thinking about in the government, but don't get me started on that one. Okay, right, Ben?
Definitely. It's only an hour show.
We don't have enough time.
But we would love to get a call in before the end of the show. We got a few minutes. It's 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. You can call and talk to Harry and I. And I did want to mention that the webinars, if you can't make the webinars, you know, if you're busy at 10 or 2, or if it's the week of webinars and you can't make it at 2, all of them have been recorded. They're on our website at www.herzoglaw.com. And I always joke and say, it's like Netflix, right? You can plug into one of the webinars on the website, put it on pause, go get a snack, get something to drink, come back, watch some more of it. I mean, it sounds silly, but there's a lot of people that have called in and talked to me and said, okay, I watched the webinar, and I have this question or that question, or if I've had people that call and say, you know, my father just passed away, what do I need to do? And I start going through things, and I'm like, better yet, you know, if you really are concerned, then you should go on our website and watch the webinar on what to do when a loved one dies. And it literally walks you through everything you need to think about and everything that's going on. Or if you're thinking about applying for community Medicaid, right? Or you need to know the difference between mm-hmm. community Medicaid and chronic care Medicaid. You can go on and watch the webinar on aging in place. So there's lots of different webinars out there that are on our website, on our blog page, where you can take your time and watch them, you know, Christmas Eve, gather the family around, open your presents, and watch a webinar. Right?
I can't think of anything I'd rather do on Christmas Eve, but what a great idea. Thanks, Dan. It sounds like more fun than wrapping my presents, which is usually what I'm doing. I need to find somebody like your mom who's going to come in here and wrap my presents for me. Huh? Too bad she's all the way out in Missouri.
What? It'd be a little bit expensive. You could fly her in for it, though.
I could ship them all out FedEx. You could wrap them and send them back. That would cost me about $800, probably. I guess I'll have to wrap myself.
Yeah, it's tough, Harry. It's a tough thing.
You know,
that's why I do a lot of gift bags.
I really hate to jump in on this because I'm really interested in trying to find somebody for Harry to wrap his presents. But we do have a caller on the line. We have we have Steve from Red Hook.
Okay.
Good morning, Steve.
Yes, good morning. You guys spoke about this new power of attorney.
Yes.
What's with the ones that we have now? Are they going to stand up in court?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The old ones are not. The old ones are still perfectly fine, okay? If you have one, you got it. You don't have to do a new one. This is just going forward.
Uh-huh.
There'll be a new, hopefully a little more streamlined, fewer pages form that will accomplish the same powers. It will grant the same powers as the old one did. When they put the current statute in effect, Steve, back in 2009, mm-hmm. They grandfathered in all the existing powers of attorney. Okay, so
okay.
The old three pagers. We still have clients who still have the old three pager.
Okay.
They're perfectly valid, so it doesn't say invalidate your form. It's perfectly fine. You don't have to come in and sign a new one unless you want to. But going forward, for new ones going forward, it ought to be a little simpler thing to do.
Yeah. Do you recommend going in and going in and getting it updated or whatever?
Well, I think here's what happened with the old statute. Over time, when the old statute that got rid of the three-page form went into effect, for a while it was okay because banks were familiar with the old form and the new form. Now, 10 years later, you know, the people at the branch bank don't remember 10 years ago when the old form was in effect because they were still in high school. You know, the branch manager was in college, and now and now she's running the bank, but she's only 35. You know, she's only 35 years old. So, by getting a new form, you're going to be up to date. So over time, it may be like sometimes when people's kids' addresses change, they might want to just have the form rerun and re-signed so the kids have current addresses and things. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do that for you for a relatively inexpensive charge. And then you got the current form that everybody's familiar with. But even your old form, what the statute does is even your old form will benefit from the new rules.
Good.
So if the old form is refused, you'll still be able to get the bank to try to recognize it. So I think that's what they did with the old one. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure.
Welcome.
Take care.
Have a great weekend. Squeeze another call in. That was a great question because remember they grandfathered the old ones in, but now we're getting a lot of pushback from the banks. The banks are like, no, you have to have that 13-page form or we're not going to take it. So it's been difficult.
They do because, you know, memories fade over time, and while we remember the old form, most people in these financial institutions, the other thing you have to remember with these financial institutions is they're not all in New York State, okay? You know, it's like early on in the first half hour when I was talking about the beneficiary problem with the insurance company. You know, the insurance company is a national major insurance company, but the person I'm talking to is in Hartford, Connecticut. They're not in New York State. And so their legal department is reviewing stuff for powers of attorney and beneficiary forms all across the country. And different states have different rules about whether or not divorce severs a former spouse's rights to certain assets. And frankly, that wasn't always the case in New York. For many years in New York, a divorce severed rights in a will and in a retirement plan, but it didn't sever rights in life insurance. Well, now it does. But that only came in maybe 15 years ago. And so rules change, and these in-house legal departments aren't always up to date. So you really got to be on your toes about these things. So something doesn't inadvertently get paid out to the wrong person.
Harry and Debbie, we have another caller. We have Jim from Waterford.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Debbie. I have a question. I have a irrevocable trust in the house and some of my money's in it. But I also have some money that isn't in it, plus my IRA. And I wanted to know if I passed away, would that money that isn't in it have to go to probate, or would that be you wouldn't have to go?
Well, your IRA, you've got beneficiaries on it, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that would go to the beneficiaries. The other money that you don't have into the trust, does it have beneficiaries on it, or is it joint?
Yes. No, I have beneficiaries on it.
So a will only controls assets that you have individually in your name when you pass away. So if everything's joint or has a beneficiary or it's in the trust, then it's automatically going to go to those people. We don't have to probate the will. The problem is a lot of people have like a checking account and they think that they've put their son or daughter on as joint when in fact they just put them on as power of attorney, right? And the problem with that is whenever the person passes away, the ability of the power of attorney to have access to that account dies with that person. So we end up having to probate their will because we have that one little individual account that they forgot to put a beneficiary on. So I would just check my accounts and make sure that you have beneficiaries. And as far as your IRA, you should probably have beneficiaries and then contingent beneficiaries so that if something happened to your beneficiaries, then there's somewhere for it to go. Because if you have say, your daughter as a beneficiary on your IRA, and then she passes away before you and you never change it, it's going to end up going back to your estate and we're going to have to probate your will.
I see. I got one other question if I have time. My daughter is a trustee and power of attorney in Mike's of the irrevocable trust, and my son is the executor of my will. Would she just take the money in the trust and divide it up like she was instructed to in the trust, and then would he sell the house or would she sell the house? The house is in the trust and she's the trustee, but he's the executor of the will.
She would sell the house, right? The executor of the will would never have to be appointed, right? He would have absolutely no job to do if everything is either in the trust or it's joint or it has a beneficiary, right? So let's just say you have your kids on as beneficiary of all of your accounts, then what they would do is they would just send the death certificate into those companies. The companies are going to give them the money. As far as the house being in the trust, your daughter, once you passed away, she could call up the realtor, have them get the sign, put it in the yard, sell the house, and then divide the money up according to the instructions that are in the trust. So the executor wouldn't have anything he had to do.
Okay. All right. All right. That kind of helps me out a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Take care. Bye. You know, that's kind of confusing. A lot of people don't really understand that if we don't have to probate the will, the executor has nothing to do.
Yeah, we try to design our estate plan so we don't have to go through a probate proceeding. So our, you know, and that's why, as Debbie said, assets in a trust don't have to be probated in order to be distributed when the person who set up the trust dies. Assets with a living beneficiary don't, and that's why we always recommend that there be at least one alternate or contingent beneficiary. And so there's no point to probating the will if there are no probatable assets. The only thing that would theoretically pass through the will rather than the trust would be your personal assets, your stuff, you know, your clothing, your jewelry, your auto, you know, your lawnmower, your TV set. And ordinarily, unless people are fighting about those things, we wouldn't have to probate a will to transfer those items to the beneficiaries. So, and there is a lot of confusion about the difference between an executor and a trustee, but in most instances with our estate plans, I don't know. There's no need to probate the will and put the client through that expense. So it saves the family a lot of time and effort down the road. I mean, in a normal probate proceeding, just a simple probate proceeding in any county in the Capital District, we have to keep the estate open for 7 months, right? Once we file the probate petition, we have to keep the estate open for at least 7 months in order, because creditors could file a claim against the estate in the probate court. So, I mean, and say, oh, well, my mother has no claims against her estate. She pays all of her bills. Yeah, okay, but how about that automobile accident? She had a fender bender about 6 months ago, and there could be a claim arising out of an automobile accident or something like that. So we can't really complete the estate. So this is going to take, 6 to 12 months to just finalize a very simple estate, whereas in a trust, you know, we don't have to do all that stuff.
Right, go
ahead, I was done.
I was just going to say there, I just had an estate, and it was past 7 months.
I hate to break in there, Debbie, but we've got about 2.5 minutes left, and we have a caller. We have Carol from Schenectady.
Oh, good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Debbie. I would like to know the difference between a power of attorney and durable power of attorney.
Oh, I like the easy questions. Anyway, so a durable power of attorney is a power of attorney that's still good if you become incapacitated, right? Which is kind of the goal, right? Because that's what we need it for. So if you do a durable power of attorney and you become incapacitated, the person can still act on your behalf. a non-durable power of attorney isn't any good after you become incapacitated. So a lot of times you'll see financial institutions that just do a power of attorney, that and they do that so that your kids can kind of sign on your accounts and do stuff like that. But if you became incapacitated with that type of power of attorney, they're not going to be able to act.
Great. That's great to know.
Yeah, because what happened years ago, and this was such an archaic legal thing, years ago, if you signed a power of attorney, and then you, let's say you got serious advanced dementia or Alzheimer's, all of a sudden the power of attorney was invalid, even though you were perfectly fine when you signed it. And the law in New York, now you had to have a guardian appointed. They used to call it was a conservator. Somehow, and so it was just a forced legal proceeding to generate legal fees for lawyers that was completely unnecessary. So finally one day the legislature woke up and said, well, if this person was mentally competent when they made the power of attorney, why shouldn't it continue if they lose their capacity to, you know, exercise independent judgment? So, but you had to say it. You had to say, oh, this power of attorney will survive my subsequent disability or incapacity. Okay, so it's still valid. Now I think they're all presumptively durable unless you say they're not. And I don't think I've seen a non-durable one. These come out of a law office in a long time, but it is still a distinction in the law, and a very important one, because a guardianship proceeding today is very expensive
right.
compared to
and
just getting a little power.
Know, and if you don't know this,
right,
by the time you become incapacitated, it's too late.
Well, you don't know this. You're not a lawyer. You could probably read the whole power of attorney, and you would have no idea whether it was durable or not durable. You know, I'm not being disrespectful, but the average lay person just doesn't understand the language that's in these things. But it's
exactly.
helpful.
And my attorney asked me that, you know, whether you want it durable or not. And to be honest with you, I kind of forgot. And so
right.
I thought, this is a perfect chance to ask what the difference is, and because I did sign a durable power of attorney.
Great.
Well, that's what you want. That's what you want. Dave,
right.
Sounds like we're out of time. So everybody have a great weekend, a great Christmas, and we'll talk to you
Thank
next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.